Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, everybody, we decided to take this week off, so here's one of our classic episodes. Hope you enjoy.
As always, are you guys all ready to get all too real too?
Are you?
I am. Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, I already asked you that, didn't I? Or no, I asked the folks.
We are. I don't know if the people.
Yeah, they didn't answer us.
Well,
I couldn't hear them.
That's rude of them, but whatever. We'll get their attention one of these days.
One day. Anyways, welcome to the show, folks. Today. We're discussing something very interesting here. What do you want to call this here? Like weird and wacky fan theories about like TV and movies here?
Yeah, that's a long name, but yeah, we can that.
Wacky fan theories, maybe?
Weird, wacky fan theories of TV shows.
Yeah. All too wacky?
All too... no, you're not.
Sorry.
Maybe not.
Yeah. All too really wacky?
No.
All too strange.
Okay, maybe.
All too crazy.
Yeah. I don't know.
All too weird.
We just call it all too real too, and just
keep the. I'm gonna keep the same name for the show.
This special yeah, whatever. All right, so.
Okay. Anyways, this special episode we're discussing. Matt and I both chose five different fan theories that we found on the interwebs. The net of inter. Anyways, that we kind of found enjoyable. I'm gonna let Matt talk about his five first, and we're gonna kind of discuss each one as we go. And hopefully, you'll enjoy our nice little discussion of these crazy, 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 wacky, 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 weird and wild fan theories. They're all too wacky and weird.
Good. I like that DJ voice.
Hey.
All of a sudden, you changed into a DJ voice.
Yes, I did. Okay, folks, these are wacky, wacky, wacky. All right, anyways. Okay, here we go. All right, what's the first one here, Matt?
It's the SS Minnow was actually a drug vessel.
Okay, if you don't know what the SS Minnow was, that was the vessel on Gilligan's Island. So what's the deal here? What are people saying?
Basically, that, like, okay, so... How do I explain this? Like, it's hard to put into words. But basically, like, it had something to do with, like, someone had taken way too much luggage on the boat for, like, a three-hour boat ride because it was supposed to be, like, a three-hour thing.
Yeah, almost all of them did. I mean, they all had changes of clothing and stuff, except for Gilligan and Skipper.
Exactly. So it was kind of like...
And the professor, maybe, too. But
what's going on with that? And then...
Especially the Howells, though. The Howells tended to have... Mr. and Mrs. Howell had a lot of different clothing.
Right, so it always kind of had some sort of, like, thing. And then one of them was supposed to be actually an undercover agent. I forgot which character. And that they were essentially going to make, like, the bust before everything happened, and of course they couldn't.
It was Mary Ann.
That's right. I think Mary Ann was supposed to be like an undercover agent that was going to arrest them before everything went south, and then now she had to keep her cover because she was stuck with them. So if they knew that she was going to arrest them, they probably would kill her on the island because there's no rules there and whatever. And it's just a weird like take on such a like happy show. You know what I mean? Like, because it makes it like really, really dark. Like,
I read another one too where they were saying that like Gilligan's Island was hell. And each of the characters represented like the seven deadly sins. So yeah, you know, there's a lot of weird theories.
Which one would be Gilligan or Skipper?
Skipper, I think, was like gluttony or something.
Right. Okay. What about Gilligan, though? What would he be?
I can't remember.
Just Goofy? Is that a sin?
No.
Okay. Oh.
No. No. That's a Disney character.
Okay. Well, we all know now that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, but it's just I don't know. It's crazy. This one, I mean, what do you think the chances of that being part of the idea that that Sherwood Schwartz had when he created the TV show?
I don't think so.
I don't
because
either.
It was not that kind of a show.
No.
And plus, during that era, that wasn't really a thing that people were doing for the most part, except if you were like really, really edgy and trying to do something different. But
There wasn't really a lot of like metaphors and symbolism when it comes to things, in my opinion. But I do like the idea. It's an interesting theory that they had. But yeah. What was the next crazy, crazy one?
It was Zach Morris actually is living in a fantasy world.
And Zach Morris, in case you don't know, is the lead character in Saved by the Bell, as well as Good Morning, Miss Bliss, the show prior to it.
Yeah, Good Morning, Miss Bliss was the show on the Disney Channel, which took place in Indiana, and they were junior high. I think they were in seventh grade. And he was kind of like, he aspired to be the Zach Morris that he was later on in high school, but he didn't ever quite – no one ever quite saw him that way, so it didn't really work. Like, he tried to do, like, schemes, and he tried to, you know, like, I don't know, be seductive, I guess, to the girls. But
He was kind of more of a nerd.
No one really took him seriously. And then the theory is that when that show got canceled or got changed into Saved by the Bell –
retooled, as they call it in the business.
Yeah, retooled, and Miss Bliss was removed from the show completely. So was a few of his friends, and then a few of them stayed on. Like Lisa was there. Screech, came.
Basically, it was Lisa, Screech, and him.
And that was it, right?
Lisa, Screech,
and
I think
that was it, right?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure. Yeah, because like Slater. Kelly and Jesse were all new creations for the new series, so only half of them came back. And Mr. Belding came back, too.
That's right, but, Mr. Belding. So the theory is that since Good Morning, Miss Bliss took place in Indiana, and since there were so many characters that existed in the new one that...
And Saved by the Bell took place at Bayside in California.
California. So what are the odds that all these people would move to the same town at the same time and go to the same school?
Yeah.
And also work at the same school? It just seemed kind of a strange thing. So this theory is that he's pretty much just dreaming this up during one of his daydreams at school or whatever.
Yeah, but this is the 80s and the 90s when you can have a show like... Boy Meets World, where you have the same teacher for every class your whole fucking life.
Yeah, that's the other anyways, weird thing. I noticed that. I'm like, how is Mr. Feeney teaching every single class? Like, he just does multi-subjects? Like, what?
Even when they go to college?
Is he the only teacher who works in school? Like, who
else? There was Mr. Turner.
Yeah, but then he got into, like, a motorcycle accident, and no one ever saw him again. So you don't know what happened to him. Did he die?
There's got
to
be some theories there.
Yeah, we should have looked that one up.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll do that another time.
Another time, yeah.
And so basically, this theory is just that He's dreaming all of this up because he's kind of like a dweeb, if you will, if you're in 1987, a dweeb, who, you know, is like the golden boy who can do no wrong, as this article says, and how, you know, the girls are just fawning after him, and they you know, fall for his quite stupid seductive techniques that really aren't.
Yeah, it's like everybody wants to, every girl wants to date him, every guy wants to be him.
Right.
And it's kind of crazy, and then, you know, the only character that didn't really change from the one show to the other, I mean, I guess Belding didn't really change much, but Screech didn't change at all. Screech was kind of nerdy. Actually, Screech kind of got nerdier.
He did, yeah.
It was like, I don't know.
Yeah, Screech, they kind of did the whole, like, take him to the extreme.
Yeah, where you become a caricature of
like,
a caricature.
Like Britta did on Community, or yeah. what they did to Britta on yeah. Community, where she kind of had that going on.
And I think they did that on purpose on Community more than on, like, this show, where it just yeah. kind of gradually happened. Yeah, or like the whole like Steve Urkel type thing of the era.
Right, God, yeah. Urkel mania, yeah.
Yeah.
And there was even some, quote, evidence with the actual theme song to the show where
oh, yeah.
he's talking about like...
Because he wakes up in the morning, yeah. bell gives out a warning.
Right.
And then don't know if I can make it on time.
Right, and then... Da-da-da-da.
Give it's myself... It's all right because I'm saved by the bell.
And the bell, I guess, is supposed to be his...
His alarm,
like
waking him up. Or
well,
something.
Oh, no, that
yeah.
the bell would make him go into Fantasy World, though,
yeah,
because that would be where he wanted
oh,
to be.
Oh, gotcha.
I think. I don't know. It had something to do like that. That's pretty much all there is to this that theory. That's not.
Yeah, because the lyrics of the song don't really fit his character at all.
I know.
Because he's not the type, you know, to do those things. It's like, you
right.
know, because like we said, everybody bows to Zach and...
He gets away with so much shit.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love those things that Funny or Die do, where those, Zach Morris is trash
Zach
thing.
Morris is trash.
Yeah, because he is. It's
like
they're hilarious.
All the things he's pulled, like, how has he not gone to jail for any mm-hmm. of these things, like, or some of them at least.
And, I mean, I don't think this was a purposely done thing that they did when they were retooling the show, because I don't think they were smart enough to do this. But I totally buy this theory, because it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, really, it seems like that whole show, because, I mean, the thing is, they were in school for way too long, too.
Yeah, weren't they like 6 years in high
yeah.
school or something like that?
And then you have like characters just disappear. Like for a little bit there, was it like Kelly and Jesse just disappeared for a while, and they replaced them with Tori.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they had those like rotating episodes where like 1 week Tori would be there, and then the next week Kelly and because I actually know what happened behind the scenes. There was like negotiations of their contracts,
oh, okay.
and they had already shot, and NBC wanted more episodes, so they shot them, and then they just rotated them in. But it's funny, then like Tori's not there when they graduate. Like, you know, is Tori just a made up character in Zach's head? Like, you know, they're trying to deal, and it's Tori in certain ways was like kind of a combo of Kelly and Jesse in certain ways, personality-wise. And it was like, hey, we can get this one actress and get her to play basically two characters. That's my theory on that one. I really like this theory a lot.
Yeah.
And I think there could be, like, I don't know, essays written upon this probably, and there probably are.
There probably are. And what would that do with the college years then? Would that be also part of his fantasy?
I think so, but I mean... But,
that's more of like
but,
a fever dream, though.
But then we get into, like, the new class... Where nothing makes sense because that is not Zach's not part of that.
That's right. Screech is
Screech comes in like the second season after the college years got canceled.
Yeah,
they brought Screech back.
Okay,
and he's the assistant to the principal.
And Belding's
after
right.
going to 1 year of college, he's an assistant.
Yeah,
he's like an assistant principal.
That's pretty
at the
impressive.
School.
I mean,
I didn't know you could get that in a year.
Well, apparently,
if you're Screech, you can. But yeah, and then that show just had like such a turnover, like in a cast.
It was
like,
a weird.
I liked it, but it was like they rehashed stories, and then they had like the first season they had like rehashed characters. Like there was a character that named Weasel who was basically Screech and like stuff
okay.
like that. There was like every character totally was a carbon copy, like five times removed from the other characters. So that's the only part of this thing that doesn't make it logical, because the whole unless somehow the new class was somebody else's fever dream, I don't
Ooh.
Know. Maybe it was Belding's.
There could have been Screech's. Or
no, it had to be Belding because he's the only one there the whole time.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Who knows? Maybe this whole thing is not really Screech's. I mean, Zach's dream. Maybe
it's Belding's.
Maybe it's Belding's. Somehow he's dreaming that he wants Zach to be cool.
What?
I don't know.
Belding probably wishes he was... the fantasy version of Zach Morris that doesn't exist in real life. So he sees Zach Morris struggling in junior high, and he's like, oh, I was just like that kid. You know what? It's too late for me to be the cool kid, but hopefully he could be the cool kid. So then he has a fantasy of a student.
And then, yeah.
Which is kind of creepy because he's having fantasies about a student. Well, okay, whatever.
Yeah. and having fantasies about a teenage boy. Anyways, let's not go there. Let's move on to the next wacky, Ray crazy theory. This one is really kind of crazy.
This one is actually disturbing. Is Toby is the real Scranton Strangler from The Office? Character named Toby.
Toby Flenderson, played by Paul Lieberstein, who was also one of the writers on the show.
There was a serial killer who was would strangle people, and Toby had been asked, or not asked, but been summoned to be on the jury to either, you know, say he's guilty or not guilty. And he was the only one for a while to question whether or not he was guilty, and he was kind of holding up the jury, and they were all kind of getting mad at him for, you know, being the one person that was the standing out, and then he eventually caved in and, put his own guilty plea, and then they end up sending him for, like, life in prison or whatever, or I'm not sure how many years, if it was life or not, but and the theory goes is that this kind of happened a while back, but then he started becoming, like, obsessed with the Scranton Strangler later on because he had, like, doubts of whether or not he was really guilty, and it kept eating at him. Like, he couldn't, like, live life without, like, without just knowing... Just knowing if he did the right thing or whatever. So then he actually visited the guy in prison, and the guy like jumped over to like try to attack him. So the theory here is that the guy was framed, and Toby is the one that really is a Scranton Strangler. So then the guy was so furious that someone would come to visit him, who was like the actual killer, and just kind of taunting him like, "Oh, I came to visit you in prison," type thing.
Yeah, and I mean, at one point he goes to try to make a new life in Costa Rica.
Right, that's kind of weird. And then doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't.
Which it didn't explain why he even did that either. Was he running away from something? Like, I mean, that's kind of odd, right?
I know.
Did he kill someone and he's like just skipping town type of thing? Like, or did he go to Costa Rica to try to murder people there?
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, and then he moves back, so then... Maybe that's all that moving back and forth was all about, was kind of like to kill people and then leave. And then, that's pretty much all there is to that one. It's kind of disturbing, but there's not much to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think my personal opinion on it, that could be, but I doubt they intended that at all. But they might have put hints in there just to make you think it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where... That's what newer writers do now, is like
they pepper in things just in case.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt, what's the next crazy, crazy, wacky, wild, weird, unbelievable, strange, exotic, mind-blowing, amazing, splendiferous fan theory that we have here?
It's the U.S. government canceled Firefly.
Okay, this one really intrigues me, man.
Yeah, this one is actually one of the most interesting ones.
Yeah, Firefly, the J.J. Abrams show, which was quite possibly one of the best shows ever on television.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it only lasted 11 episodes. Literally, nobody saw it coming. Like everyone thought this was going to be a show for, like, the ages, like, especially fans. But even critics were, you know, thought this was such a... And then just, you know... lasted like all but 11 episodes, and then that's it. There was talks.
The ratings kind of sucked.
But
they also aired it out of order and shit too. Well, Fox fucked with it.
See, that's the thing too. Yeah, one of the episodes. So like there was a whole continuity issue that lot of time that confuses people, viewers,
because it was a later episode that aired as the first episode in the pilot aired later
so
in the season.
You already learned stuff that you weren't supposed to learn yet, and it was just weird. And but basically it's about like it's called like a space opera, I guess, and. It's about like a kind of like a group of rebels who are like fighting an oppressive, like almost kind of like a fascistic regime called Union of Allied Planets, and they're basically like your typical like conquer all, you know, have a very strict kind of structured life for the people, you know, like curfews and everything.
Yeah,
it's very very hierarchical type of society that they, you know, are trying to impose on all the planets. And you know, this is like a group of rebels that are trying, you know, to fight against that. And
and also they're making money by being like kind of bounty hunters and
stuff. Well, yeah, they were doing all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of like a Han Solo type thing, like, you know, where you know, they were good guys, but they were still had like their own kind
of
moral,
it's like Han Solo or Cowboy Bebop sort of thing or whatever. I think Cowboy Bebop is probably the closest in tone to it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that show, it's a really good show. You should check it out. I
mean, the greatest anime series ever made, in my opinion, but that's only my opinion. And, you know, my opinion matters because I'm always right.
You're,
Oh, wait. No, I'm not.
Yeah. So, I guess the theory to this, the people, like the fans who have this belief, is that this was 2002, at, you know, the fall season of 2002. And during this time, the Bush administration was just starting to ramp up propaganda, you know, to justify a war about 6 months later. And I remember this because it was like in September or August of that year. And I actually remember going to my friend's
house. Yeah, it was canceled just 3 minutes before, 3 months, not 3 minutes. Yeah, 3 minutes before the war, 3 months before the invasion of Iraq.
Right. And, and the show started just around the same time that the, because I remember this actually very vividly, is that I'd come home from school and went to my friend's house, and his parents always had the news on, like CNN or whatever, and it was right there where they had like a big thing, like an art thing saying, like, you know, Saddam Hussein or whatever, and that was like the very first like day that they started, like the media started kind of like ramping up that thing.
Yeah.
And so the show started around that same exact, probably if not that week, probably within 2 weeks of that starting out. So the theory is that since the show is about like a group of rebels fighting against like a you know, basically like an empire, you know.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that the United States is like kind of like, you know, its own empire. So the Bush administration was like so paranoid about like anti-government sentiment, because this is right just like a year after 9/11 too. So like there was a lot of like anybody who said anything against the government for any reason whatsoever was kind of suspect as like being like really like some kind of radical or whatever. So now you have a TV show
that never happens anymore.
No. Well,
oh wait,
well, no. it was a different time.
Yeah.
As Jeff Winger was said, 2002 was a simpler time, even though it wasn't. But yeah, the only reason why I'm doing the background is because that's kind of what was going on.
Oh yeah,
at that time.
Definitely.
And this was an actual TV show that kind of could be interpreted in that way or inspire people to kind of have that kind of point of view about like empires starting wars with like smaller groups or smaller. And so that's the idea, is that the government pretty much either canceled it themselves. Which I don't think the government actually has authority to cancel a TV show, at least not in this country. I know in Canada, the government's more involved in like TV, isn't it?
It's but the thing
like,
is, here it's. I mean, there are certain things that the, you know, like the FCC won't let me be, or me be me. Oh wait, no, I mean, no, the FCC can, you know, control over you know what goes out there, but they have no control over what Fox decides to air and what they don't, and even with, you know, Rupert Murdoch being a strong Republican and probably or not Republican, or at least conservative, because he's not even a U.S. citizen as far as I know.
Oh, yeah.
He's Australian, so I don't know. But anyways, the who owns Fox, or at least at the time, and he'll still own the network.
I think he still owns it.
Yeah, he does right now, but he'll still own the network even after the Disney merger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he won't own the film company, but he'll own the TV network.
Okay.
So anyways, it's a weird world we live in.
Yeah,
but anyways, he I doubt that with him even being as conservative as he is, that the government has any say in what Fox decides to air. It boils down to, the reason it got canceled is that Fox just fucked with, because Fox at the time and still to this day to a point don't really know how to schedule things.
Right.
They schedule things at weird times. I mean, because there's a lot of good shows that came out over the years that died on Fox,
like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Well, they didn't die.
They canceled it. Yeah, even though it was getting good ratings.
Right.
But that's more of a money thing too.
Okay.
When it comes to that, that's a synergy problem where you've got that show being produced by Universal but airing on Fox.
Oh, okay.
And then NBC is owned by Universal, Comcast. So
yeah, I could see.
You know, that's what it should have been on NBC in the first place.
It's that type of show anyway. It's not a Fox type of show.
No, it's not.
Anyway.
I mean, Fox was trying to get that kind of show, though, which was good at the time. But, it's just like why they brought in, Tim Allen's show Last Man Standing, because that's produced by Fox, whereas it was on ABC, which is a Disney-owned station. So, the reason that show got canceled, and then there was like a whole conspiracy about about liberals getting it canceled which is, in my opinion, just as insane as this theory, if not more. But and Tim Allen himself has even come out and said that it was a money thing,
right?
Which it was, because you got a show that's being produced by Fox, but it's not airing on ABC, and
so
it's
you got to pay two companies. Yeah,
it's easier to have something in house.
Right.
And produce it. And plus, Tim Allen was asking for more money on his contract,
star.
Regardless, he probably deserved it because, I'm not a big fan of his, but I'm not going to deny the fact that the guy is popular and, people like him. And, he did do Home Improvement for years. It's not like he's just a nobody actor.
No, he's a pretty big star.
Yeah. So he probably deserves to be paid big star money. And I don't think ABC was willing to pay him, so that's why they canceled the show. Which
plus,
makes sense.
He was in one of my favorite movies of all time.
What's that?
It was called, I forgot the name of it. Oh, damn it.
Big Trouble?
Yeah, Big Trouble.
That's one of
my favorite movies
of all time. My favorite of all time, too.
One of my favorite movies.
I love that movie.
And so he was
my favorite Tim Allen movie,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah,
and I actually kind of like Christmas with the Cranks a little bit.
Oh, I love Christmas with the Cranks. I watch that every Christmas.
Yeah, me too.
And then I liked Tim Allen a lot.
Yeah,
don't get me
too.
Wrong. I'm just not a big fan of him politically.
Right,
but
the
thing is, unlike some people, I don't hold somebody's politics in mind when they're acting.
Right.
Whatever. I might disagree with them, but I know people that are on either side of the coin. It's like, I'm a Republican, so I can't like that guy because he's a Democrat, or I'm a Democrat, I can't like that guy because he's a Republican. I tend to be more liberal about things, but I'm not a Democrat or a Republican.
Right.
But still, just because somebody's a conservative person, I can't deny that. And there are also liberal people. Like, I can't stand Bill Maher, and he's pretty liberal.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, I'm just saying.
The thing about him is that he's so arrogant.
Yeah, that's my problem with
him. And that, just even by when you just hear him talk, you can just hear the tone in his voice that, like I'm better than you. Like, it just has this, like, I know so much more things than you do.
Whereas I was at work, and I'm talking to a friend of mine who's really conservative, and he loves Bill Maher.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you never know. It's just funny. We're talking, and we just found it really hilarious that I'm more liberal and he's more conservative, and he likes Bill Maher and I hate him.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily hate him. I mean, whatever.
Well, I know what you mean.
I dislike his humor.
I despise his. I used to be a fan of his when I was really young. I was like 16.
Yeah.
I did have a Bill Maher phase at
that
age.
Like the movie Religious that he did.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's actually good.
It's a decent movie, I guess. Mm-hmm. Even in that movie, he
seems arrogant in it, but I like the points of view that it brings forward, and it actually makes you think. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, I know, but even in that movie, he treats some religions like Islam with like fire, like every little thing can be criticized. But when it came to, I noticed this, when it came to the religions that he was raised in, which is Judaism and Catholicism, he was very soft on those.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really interesting.
And he seems like really hard on Islam and LDS.
He hates Islam and Muslims.
He also seemed pretty harsh on the Latter-day Saints.
Oh, yeah,
as well.
I remember that too. But yeah.
So, yeah. This is another kind of crazy, wild, wacky one.
The Flint. This is the one. I like this one a lot. The Flintstones takes place in a post-apocalyptic future, and all. What's up?
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. And a B-side to this theory is that the Jetsons and the Flintstones take place during the same time period, and the idea is that the Jetsons, because they were kind of like a rich or well-to-do family, so the idea is that the wealthier people are able to live up in the clouds, called Cloud City, because the earth was pretty much like scorched or whatever through like some kind of nuclear holocaust. This was again during the Cold War in the 1960s, so a lot of people were actually worried about like a nuclear holocaust. Not just in here, but also in the Soviet Union. The government in the Soviet Union was also telling its citizens that the United States is going to bomb them into oblivion. So a lot of people in the world were really, really concerned about, like my parents, for example, like when they were in school, they made them do that stupid duck and cover thing. Like that can actually save you from anything. So people actually did have those kind of like drills or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So the idea,
you know, what will save you though, if you get inside of a refrigerator like Indiana Jones in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, that's not going to save you.
But
either.
But then they had those cartoons or commercials later on saying don't go in the refrigerator because you might get stuck and you can't get out and you die inside.
No, but it's actually proven that what Indiana Jones did in that movie would not have saved him.
He would have died. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's just made out of some kind of steel. I mean, it's not gonna. Or plastic, even, it's not going to save you.
Yeah, well, supposedly the lead lining in it or something.
No, it's not going to do anything. And I mean, if anything, it just might take you a little longer, but make you live in misery while you hear destruction all around you instead of just having to be a quick.
You're going to you might have a refrigerator collapse around you instead of near you.
Yeah,
but anyways,
so this theory is that the Jetsons were part of a wealthier class, and that they were able to live in Cloud City, whereas the Flintstones were, couldn't afford to live there, so they were forced to live on Earth.
Was Lando Calrissian in this Cloud City?
No, he wasn't.
Oh, okay,
he
just making sure.
Was it actually called Cloud City or
it
was Orbit City.
Orbit City. Yeah,
I keep calling it Cloud City.
No, it's cool. It makes sense.
Yeah, an Orbit City. And the sort of like, I guess, evidence for this, for want of a better word, is that the Flintstones like used like dinosaurs and animals as like to do like modern like tools. So the idea is like, well, how would they know how to
They had the idea of a vacuum cleaner because they used to have them prior to the post-apocalyptic thing happening.
But my question is, okay, there's dinosaurs in this world.
Yeah.
So where did the dinosaurs come from?
I don't know.
They just appear after the nuclear holocaust. Like.
And then I have the question. There's the movie, too. There's a movie the Flintstones or whatever it is, or the Flintstones meet the Jetsons, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
So, and they time travel.
That's right. Okay.
And
I haven't seen that in ages.
I haven't either, trying to remember the details of that movie, but I'm just trying to figure out how that explains this theory.
I don't remember the time travel part. I do remember the part where they had the music video of Take On Me.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. The Jetson's daughter, I forgot her name, whatever her name is.
Judy.
Judy. I guess she has a crush on this guy or something, and she kind of has like this like daydream or whatever.
Was that in that movie, or was that in the Jetsons movie?
Oh, maybe it was just...
Because there was also the Jetsons movie that was in theaters.
Oh, maybe it was
this one was like, I think, a made-for-TV or direct-to-video or whatever it was at the time.
Yeah.
But it was like the Flintstones meet the Jetsons, or Jetsons meet the Flintstones, and I just remember there was time travel involved, and I'm pretty sure, like, I can't remember if it was, I think it was like that George and the Jetsons family traveled back to the time period of the Flintstones. But but my theory is maybe they didn't really time travel and they just fell down there.
Yeah, maybe they just. Yeah, they fell from orbit. They couldn't afford to go back, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember George, I think, trying to drive the car and couldn't figure it out or something like that because they used their feet, I think.
Now I'm going to have to look this movie up and watch it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it. It's been ages since I've seen it. But yeah, that's basically the gist of that theory is that...
Yeah, I don't really buy it.
I don't buy it. I mean, it's kind of fun to think about.
It's a fun theory to think about. Okay, now here's like... That was your fifth one that you chose here.
Okay.
So now we've got... there's five that I looked through. Not necessarily my favorite theories, but ones I chose, if that makes sense, that I found online. Okay, this one is kind of crazy. Jack in Titanic, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, is from the future. Basically, could Jack Dawson's intentions for saving Rose have been something other than love? Fan theory posits that that he's actually a time traveler who... came from the future to keep Rose from committing suicide. Some signs that they're saying here is that talk about like his anachronisms in his fashion, like his haircut and his backpack weren't common until later. They also mentioned stuff about he talked about like man-made structures that weren't yet created in 1912, like a roller coaster that he mentions on the Santa Monica Pier that wasn't there. I don't buy this one at all.
That's one of the weakest ones, I think.
Yeah, me too. But, I mean, there's people out there that truly believe this, and whatever. I mean, I guess I could see that to a point, but my thing is it's a movie. The reason his hair looks different is because that was the hairstyle of the time, and that was the hairstyle that Leonardo DiCaprio had. I don't know. Not saying that they... And sometimes people just tend to not really be that accurate when it comes to hairstyles, because you'll see a movie made in the 70s that takes place in the 30s, and mm-hmm. you'll be like, they didn't have... They totally have 70s hairstyles, but right. it's the 30s. Or, you know, you'll see something in the 90s, like this one, and they have 90s hairstyles, but it takes place in 1912. And I don't know. I don't buy this one as a good theory. It's a very weak.
It's weak.
Probably the weakest one.
I mean,
on this
for
list.
One thing, yeah, it is. Like for one thing, I've seen actually pictures of people during that time period who do kind
do
of
have that
this haircut.
Yeah, I do
so
too.
So it's not like it was.
I mean, and honestly, I think the him referencing a roller coaster is just somebody didn't do their research.
I was gonna say yeah.
I don't think that was intended that he was a time traveler.
People.
That's just a flub
yeah.
in the movie, you know. But, you know, I guess that's where theories come from, though. A lot of times are flubs in
yeah.
movies that people create theories based upon them. So I'm not going to totally poo-poo this idea to people, but... And I said poo-poo. And, but I'm going to say, you know, no. Mm-hmm. For me. The next one that I have, the next wild, wacky, crazy, enormously strange... Wacky, even. Did I say that yet?
Yeah, I think you said
okay.
wacky.
Okay. Anyways, is Walter White from Breaking Bad is actually Malcolm from Malcolm in the Middle. Okay, now bear with me here. I kind of like this one. Okay, the idea between this one is, okay, some people try to compare the character that Bryan Cranston played on Malcolm in the Middle to the character that he played in Breaking Bad. This thing posits the idea that that we never learn Malcolm's last name. It could be Malcolm White. So I kind of go along with this. Okay, and the thing is, a lot of people tend to grow up to look like their dads. So, you know, Frankie Muniz's character could have grown up to look like Bryan Cranston's character of Hal. And... the idea is that his middle name was Walter, and that he decided to go by Walter White as an adult. Mm-hmm. And he did have a very close, on the TV show, a very close relationship with his grandfather, whose name was Walter, and it was on his dad's side. So he could be Malcolm Walter White. And he grew into, and he was a really smart scientific kid, so he could have grown into a chemistry teacher. And became Walter White.
Yeah. Your personality is so different, though. I mean...
Not at the beginning.
Oh, no?
Because, I mean, the thing is, I think Walter White is the character that changes the most in the history of any television
yeah,
show.
I mean,
because and it's slow change, so it's slow burn. And that's what makes it really good and realistic. Because when he starts out, he's kind of a dorky... guy, kind of like Malcolm.
Yeah.
So, you know, this one I can buy.
It's possible.
Yeah. But I do like the comedy thing that they did after the show went off the air, though. And they had a scene where Bryan Cranston woke up in bed with his wife from Malcolm in the Middle and said the whole thing was a dream like Bob Newhart did on Newhart.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a good theory, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's decent, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one. I don't totally buy it, but we're going to, you know...
We're going to...
I think it's a lot higher than the Jack is a time traveler in the
yeah.
Titanic one.
We're going to keep on trucking. We're going to find something really good.
Okay. The next one, I really like this one, too. Ferris Bueller is just a figment of Cameron's imagination. So
Ooh.
In the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, that the movie is a lot more like Fight Club than you might think. Mm. And this one, I do kind of... buy it. Okay, the thought the idea is like, because Cameron's this nerdy, kind of shy, afraid guy who only comes out of his shell when it comes because of Ferris.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that Ferris's day only exists inside Cameron's mind. Like, the whole movie takes place inside Cameron's mind. And in his mind, he's imagining a day where he would go out with his buddy and like, Ferris is basically his other half, part of him as well. And basically, he goes out on this day, and the whole movie is in Cameron's mind, and Sloane is a girl that he has a crush on. And basically, Ferris is an idealized version of himself who is not afraid to talk to her.
Okay. I actually could see...
This one holds up in a lot of ways.
A lot, because I've seen that movie millions of times.
The only thing that puts kind of wrenches in this are some of the other characters that don't interact with Cameron.
Oh, yes, that's the thing.
And, like you know, Ferris's family. Right. Or the scenes with Ferris's sister and Charlie Sheen's character at the police station and stuff like that have nothing to do with Cameron's story.
Yeah, I guess. Or unless he just also
Dreamed all that up, yeah, but which is kind
of
weird.
But I know some of the things, like for example, like it was always Cameron that was like calling, like pretending to be someone else.
Oh, yeah, like pretending to be Sloane's dad and other things.
So it was always him doing it, not Ferris. Of course, that could just be, oh, well, he's got a lower voice than me or whatever. But still, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
I mean, this one's a lot higher than the Titanic one, maybe a little lower than the Walter White one.
Right.
Yeah.
And I kind of like, too, because Sloane, even though, like, she clearly is dating Ferris, there's also a few moments where she's kind of, like, acts a little bit, I guess,
kind of flirty,
too sweet to him.
Yeah, she's a little flirty with Cameron.
Yeah, normally wouldn't. I mean, not always, but normally wouldn't usually do something like that.
Yeah, like if we were hanging out, and one of our girlfriends was with us, I don't think she would be flirting with the other one of
right.
us.
Right.
Yeah.
So I noticed that, like, there was a scene where he was like had like his head on her shoulder, like, or something like that, or she had his, I think it was him had his head on her shoulder, kind of like taking a nap, sort of. And she just kind of let him do it, like, whatever. You know, normally, unless they just were a really close...
I mean,
close,
maybe they're just a close, you know, threesome of friends, which happens.
Yeah, I mean, so...
So, I mean, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I give this one maybe a 5.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's still a good one. The next one is one I've heard many, many times. Okay, the show Murder, She Wrote. You remember that show?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay. Jessica Fletcher, the main character played by Angela Lansbury, is actually a serial killer. I've heard this theory before. I've also heard it applied to other shows like Diagnosis Murder and other shows where it just, you know, it's like very coincidental that the main character is always around murder.
Yeah.
Because in this show, because I'm going to apply it to Diagnosis Murder as well because I've heard that one. Like, Diagnosis Murder, like in this one, she's a writer. Diagnosis Murder, he's a doctor. Neither one of them really work in the law enforcement, even though they know people that do. When you have a show like, you know, CSI or Law and Order or something, of course you're going to have a murder every week because that's a procedural cop show.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a show about a doctor or a writer and every week they happen to be around a murder, like, I don't know about you. I've been alive almost 41 years. How many murders have you been around?
None, zero.
Same here.
Yeah.
Miss Fletcher here.
But she writes about these things, so...
Yeah, but she's a fiction writer.
But... Oh, that's right. Well, but
I mean, the thing is, if you were, like, a homicide reporter, it would make more sense, but it seemed like she writes, like, murder mystery novels.
Okay, yeah. See, now
and so, for her to be around murder, like, everywhere she goes, and most of these murders, a lot of them took place in the small town that she lived in, Cabot Cove, which is a small town, and if I lived in a small town, people just kept dying.
Like a murder every single week.
I would get a little suspicious here, and it's not like it's a serial killer either, it's a different killer each week.
Well, that's how she plants the evidence each time.
Yeah.
So
the idea is that maybe she's a serial killer who's just like, you know, Yeah, like you're saying, like she's planning, like basically she's framing all these other poor innocent people.
How does she do that week in and week out? That's like,
yeah,
really,
from
really,
you know,
for 10 years.
12 years, from 1984 to 1996.
Oh, okay.
And then some movies after that too.
So for 12 years she was able to not only kill a person each week, but also frame another person yeah. each time.
And so you think about it. I mean, like, shows run, you know, like about 9 months yeah. a year. So, I mean, and there's like 20, you know, like 22 episodes a year of a show normally, or 24 back then maybe.
Right, so...
Times 12. What is that?
That's like... I don't know, but that's
a lot. Yeah.
I know it's over 200.
Yeah.
So it's over 200 murders.
Over 200 murders within 12 years. That are happening around one woman. They're not all in the same town. Sometimes when she travels.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, when she travels, they happen too.
Oh, wow. So that's even more of a proof.
Yeah.
Evidence right
like,
there.
You know, and my thing is are there other murders going on in Cabot Cove when she's not there?
Or not. And plus, too, I read about this. This town only has yeah. about like 2,000 residents. So if that many murders is such a small town, it's like I would.
Yeah,
I would
yeah. So it's like 350,000. Oh yeah, and it says 274 killings in the length
wow.
of the show that took place in Cabot Cove,
in a town of like 2,000 people. So that's kind of
What percentage of that?
That's a lot.
That would make Cabot Cove the murder capital
yeah,
of the country, at least, or maybe the world.
Yeah.
You know, by percentage.
And who would just want to live there at that point?
I mean, you're going to have more than 274 murders sometimes in a year in, like, Chicago, but...
Those are big cities, though.
But those are big cities.
Yeah.
yeah.
Don't go by quantity. You go by
no.
the percentage.
Yeah,
rate
so... yeah, so
wow.
this... So basically, Cabot Cove is the most dangerous city in America.
Possibly the world.
Yes.
Okay.
So don't move to Cabot Cove, Maine.
You know what? A lot of creepy stories take place in Maine. You notice that? Like
yeah.
all Stephen King's
books. Oh, yeah. Well, that's because Stephen King's from Maine. But
oh,
yeah,
okay.
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Maine probably hates the fact because they can't get any tourism because all these stories about like serial killers or like, you know, quiet and like foggy Maine. Don't drive at night because the roads are curvy and you might find a guy standing in front of you in a row with like a axe or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. Seriously, that's...
Or some random, you know, fear-based thing that looks like a clown is going to start attacking
yeah,
you. And,
literally, when I think yeah. of Maine, the first thing I think of is a foggy night and my car breaking down.
Yeah.
And someone, like, walking on the road. That's what I think of when I think of Maine.
Well, there are many reasons I've never visited Maine. And that's one of them.
Yeah. I don't know if I would, to be honest. At night, at least.
No, no.
In the daytime, sure.
Yeah, let's go to Maine in the day.
Just for a day, and then we leave.
Then
I mean,
we leave
gonna,
before
gonna
it gets
like
dark out.
17 hours to drive there.
I'm not saying go far into Maine. We just go into like the closest city to the border. Then as soon as the sun goes down, we just drive into the next state.
Well, we're safe now. We're not in Maine anymore.
And then if we want to visit things in Maine, we wake up the next day
yeah,
and we go to a hotel in another state.
Wow. Gotta make sure we... The sun, the sun don't set in Maine. That's a good title for something. A book right there.
Or the sun don't rise in Maine.
Ooh, there we go.
It's always dark.
Yeah.
And scary.
I can actually pitch that to Stephen King. Hey, can I get you to write half the book for me, and then I'll write the other half, and then we can both make
yeah.
money from it?
Yeah. I'm sure he'll be up
I'll
for that.
I'll just bank off your name to sell it.
You know, Stephen King is actually a really cool guy.
I know.
The thing I find really cool about him is, I'm on a little tangent about him, even though this has nothing to do with Jessica Fletcher. But, yeah. well, she was a murder mystery writer, so was he.
Yeah.
He allows people to take his short stories, as long as they're not making money off of them, and turn them into films for a dollar.
Okay.
All you got to do is send them a dollar and you can do it. Yeah, like I had friends in college. Like a lot of college kids will do that, like for their class projects or something like that. They'll take one of his short stories and turn it into a movie. He'll let you adapt it as long as you're not going to make money off of it.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. Cool guy. Okay, so yeah, and that one, I really think that sweet old Angela Lansbury as Jessica Fletcher is a serial killer. And by proxy, I think I'm going to apply that to Mark Sloan on Diagnosis Murder. And, I don't know, Perry Mason as well. And all these other shows where somebody's not... I mean, the lawyer thing makes a little more sense dealing with, you know, criminals and
right.
murderers and stuff. But there's some of these shows where it's like, I don't know.
What about Castle? That's another interesting one.
Yeah, but he's a writer, uh-huh. but he's working with a cop. But then again, I guess you can say the same thing for Jessica Fletcher and Mark Sloan, because Mark Sloan's son is like a cop on Diagnosis Murder, and there's a police, you know, sheriff or something, I can't remember his name, that works with Jessica on Murder, She Wrote from Cabot Cove, like the head of the cops, but still, that many murders in that small town. Yeah. At least you know, like some of these other shows like take place in bigger cities.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I don't know where Castle takes place. Doesn't it take place in like L.A. or New York or something?
I think so.
Yeah. And then you know, it's a bigger city. I think it's like Los Angeles on Diagnosis Murder. So I'll let those all pass as being just, you know, they call in the doctor to just, you know, or the writer to do that. But in a small town like Cabot Cove, 274 murders in 12 years.
Hmm.
That's a lot.
That's like the size of, like, Sylvania. Well, no, it's even smaller than Sylvania.
Yeah, Sylvania, Ohio, which is a...
That has, like, at least, like, what,
yeah.
20,000 people?
I mean, this is like a really small suburb
so
type town
or something.
This is,
like, even smaller than that. So imagine...
This is, like around here we have, like, White House, Ohio or something, or like, you know, a small town like that, maybe... I don't know if
that
it'd
means
be 350,000.
Like, that means like one out of 20 people.
I mean, 3,500 people there.
Yeah. That means like one out of 20 people have a chance of being murdered in this town. That's pretty bad. Like,
that's right on the sign that greets you when you drive into the town.
In Maine General, it says that.
Yeah, yes. One out of 20 of you is going to die.
Good luck. By the way, we have good seafood here, so
yeah.
You know, get it while you can.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get stabbed.
Get some Maine lobster. And that's, you know, M-A-I-N-E, not M-A-I-N. Like,
oh,
the Maine lobster. No, anyways, that's a bad How I Met Your Mother joke.
Wow.
Anyways, I'm going to end this here with my granddaddy big
Ooh.
Favorite theory of all time of anything ever. This is what we call the Tommy Westfall Universe Hypothesis. It's got a fancy title,
mm-hmm.
so you know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild and wacky.
It's wild and, yeah.
Wacky.
Mm-mm.
Wacky.
No.
You don't like that word.
I don't like that. I don't like the way it's said.
Wacky.
Ugh.
The way I say it?
That kind of.
Wacky.
Well, that's, no.
Wacky.
Now that's just kind of dark and disturbing now, but.
Wild and wacky.
Wacky.
Okay. Anyways, folks. Okay, so. In the 80s, there was, okay, before Grey's Anatomy, before ER, there was Saint Elsewhere. And they did it best, in my opinion. As much as people love Grey's Anatomy, and as much as I loved ER. no comment on Grey's Anatomy. Anyways, there was a show called Saint Elsewhere that ran for 6 years. And then in 1988, when it on the series finale, they pulled a major plot twist. Major, major plot twist. There was a character named Tommy Westfall, who was the autistic son of Dr. Westfall, who was one of the characters on the show. Okay. It is strongly suggested at the end of the series that all along, with all of its characters and mishaps and other happenings that were going on in this show, they were all inside the mind of Tommy Westfall. He had, the way the show ended is he's in this room. He has a snow globe in his hand, if I'm remembering correctly. It's been a while since I've seen this clip. He has a snow globe of the hospital Saint Elsewhere, and he's just looking at it. His dad comes home, and it's Westfall, but he's not a doctor. Comes home, and one of the other doctors is sitting there, this older doctor that Norman Lloyd played, is sitting there as well, like as his, what appears to be like the dad of Westfall now, even though he was a different doctor in mm-hmm. the hospital. And Westfall comes home, and he's wearing like a hard hat and some overalls and stuff like that, and, you know, I can't remember exactly like that, but you know, he looks like he's a construction worker. He says, "Oh, what's the boy been doing?" He's just been sitting there staring at that snow globe or something like that. And that total thing implies that, and you realize that it's St. Elsewhere that he's looking at, and you realize that, wait, Westfall's not a doctor anymore. This whole thing is inside Tommy's head. Mm. Inside the mind of a small autistic boy played by Chant Allen. So here's where it gets freaky.
Really freaky, yeah.
Really, really freaky. Okay, so there were instances where, I mean, we can go more in detail about this. There's a whole, you know, you can look this up. Just look up the Tommy Westfall universe online. There were crossovers within this show with other shows, characters from other shows, and then these characters appearing in other shows as well from this show. There was a crossover with Cheers because both shows took place in Boston. So during the actual show, like, some of the doctors went to Cheers to have a beer. And the characters of Norm and all them, Norm and, I don't know, all whatever the other characters named. Cliff, there we go.
And Cliff.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, all the characters, Sam Malone and all them, appeared in that episode. At least a couple of them. I don't know which ones. But that implies that inside the same universe of St. Elsewhere, Cheers exists. Mm. So that means, by proxy, Cheers is inside Tommy Westfall's head. So by that, Frasier, which is a spinoff of Cheers, is inside Tommy Westfall's head.
And then so makes
the character of Frasier Crane and Lilith Crane appeared on a couple episodes of Wings. So that means Wings is inside Tommy Westfall's head. There are so many shows that this ends up linking to.
Right.
There are several characters from St. Elsewhere that appeared in an episode or two of Scrubs. So that means Scrubs is inside Tommy Westfall's head. So it's not just shows from that time period. It's any show that references another show that is somehow referenced back to St. Elsewhere is all inside this thing. And there's at least 375, if not more, wow, television shows that by proxy, including The Simpsons, The X-Files, because through this show, you have, the show is somehow connected to Homicide: Life on the Street, which then connects to Munch, the character of Detective Munch, who then appeared on Law & Order SVU for several years as a main character. And the character of Munch has also appeared in more shows than any other character in history.
Oh my god.
Yeah, all played by Richard Belzer. So he was on The Wire. He was on the regular Law & Order. He was in Sesame Street. So Sesame Street is inside Tommy Westfall.
Oh, my God.
He appeared on Arrested Development in character as Munch. So basically through Richard Belzer, you get a lot more that are all inside of Tommy Westfall's head. You know, he was on The X-Files. He was on Simpsons. You can even connect, I'm not sure exactly how, but you can connect The Facts of Life. You can connect Friends. You can connect Doctor Who over in Great Britain, even.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really fun to look at. Like, if you go to the Tommy Westfall universe, you can look it up online, and you can see
like every connection,
yeah,
or every kind of like link or whatever, like a like,
yeah,
kind of like, you know, like where people have like conspiracies, like on
yeah,
a
they,
wall, like they
kinda, they have a whole grid and everything, wow, on there. Yeah, it gets really crazy. There's shows from, I mean, just going down this list here, which was last updated in August of 2016, so it's been a little while since they updated even, so there's probably more added on here. You've got shows from 24 to 90210 to 704 Hauser to Adam 12 to, you've got All My Children even, the TV, you know, the soap opera. You've got the short-lived Andy Barker PI with Andy Richter. You've got Benson. You've got Becker. You've got You got Buffy the Vampire Slayer in there. You've got Caroline in the City. You've got Cop Rock. You've got the Cosby Show.
Cop Rock.
You've got the DC's Legends of Tomorrow and all of the other DC shows by proxy. Like, you know, you got, you know, all those. You got the Danny Thomas Show from back in the day. You've got Erie, Indiana. The Drew Carey Show. Family Matters. Frasier, as I said before, you know, Full House and Fuller House by proxy. You've got General Hospital, because General Hospital takes place obviously in the same universe as All My Children and One Life to Live and all those. So that's, yeah. And you got Girl Meets World, Boy Meets World, which is funny because Boy Meets World, Dr. Craig on St. Elsewhere was played by the same actor who played Mr. Feeney. So yeah,
I thought that it had to be the character, not just the actor. Right.
It's the character. Yeah, he references St. Elsewhere on there,
Wow.
Talking about it's referenced in the show. So then it's by proxy referenced, and he's playing two different characters in the same universe by proxy. Because like the same thing is like Becker and Cheers both fall into this universe, and Ted Danson's in both shows.
Right.
So you got like Happy Days. You've got Hanging with Mr. Cooper. You've got I Dream a Genie. Joni Loves Chachi. Oh,
but those shows took place before, though. So how does that work? Like shows that came out in the 60s, like Doctor.
So,
I'm not trying to interrupt you.
No. It's a good question. Basically, what will happen is if somehow those shows are connected to another show that is part of this universe, then they become part of that universe. Mm. So, like, if a show like let's say show A takes place in 19, you know, they you know, premiered in the 80s or something, it takes place back then, but a character from that was referenced in a show that's currently on the air as being a real person. Or if one of the characters from that show appears as in a guest spot as that character. Like, let's say, I'm just making this up, but like, let's say a character from Happy Days appears in an episode of, I don't know, Grey's Anatomy. Not mm-hmm. that would ever happen, but you know, I'm just coming up with two things. Then, if Grey's Anatomy is somehow connected to this universe, then automatically Happy Days becomes part connected to that universe.
Okay.
Not that would happen, but I'm. That didn't happen as far as I know, folks, so I'm just letting you know.
That makes sense.
So, I just gave two examples. Just
so, like,
came
Doctor
off the top
Who,
of my head.
Doctor Who started off in, like, the early 60s, but since...
Yeah, but
a son,
yeah, and plus it's still on the air, so it's got people, you know, there's things that got... one of them that might interest you is Degrassi. The whole Degrassi universe is part of this, too. So this this jumps borders into Canada, jumps borders into Great Britain. It just goes everything, because there's an episode of Degrassi Junior High where they're in a hospital. Over the announcements, this is a really far-fetched one, but it actually works because they did later on say that they were referencing that character when they wrote this thing. I can't remember which. I think it might even be Dr. Westfall.
Oh, wow.
is paged at the hospital. And the reason he was paged is because some of the writers on Degrassi Junior High were fans of St. Elsewhere.
Wow.
But you've got everything from, you know, Mission Impossible to Moesha. To more
this kid is like
yeah
like a writing genius.
Yeah, you got both versions of The Office.
Oh my god.
You've got what else is kind of interesting? Seinfeld, Shameless, you've got Touched by an Angel, Trapper John MD. Because all of the MASH shows are involved in this, too. So.
Oh, wow.
You've That's... got Without a Trace, Wonder Woman, Young and the Restless. So, you know, the oldest show on the list, which first aired in 1951, is I Love Lucy. And there's currently, at the time in 2016 when they made this list, there were currently 49 shows that were on the air at that point that were in the Tommy Westfall universe.
Wow. Please tell me that one of the shows that's missing from this universe has something to do with, like, a big crash, like a lots of, like, debris, you know, floating around, like, you know. I'm hoping that's missing out of this. Just you know, maybe not, but hope against hope type of deal.
It's not on the list.
Oh, my God. Well, there we go.
Yeah. we're speaking of Big Bang Theory, folks, and I don't really care. It just got canceled after 12 glorious
years.
12 years,
yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah, but like I said, the whole Degrassi universe is in there, and like, you know, you've got like Cosby Show and Different World, which are in the same universe. They're part of it.
This kid's like all over the place. Like he's got ideas for every show.
You got both the sitcom ER and the show ER are both part of this. Which there was a sitcom named ER, which also featured George Clooney, which was only on for one season. Whoa. And George Clooney, and it was on 1984. So yeah, look it up sometime. It's interesting to see. George Clooney was in it as like an orderly or something. And it was a sitcom on, I think it was on NBC as well. Yeah, and Elliot Gould was in it too. And it was about an ER hospital, but then he ended up getting cast later on in the drama ER.
That's like bizarre.
Yeah.
I like too how like as this kid gets older, like the theory almost seems to fit, because like as he gets older, like the shows get more like serious and like also like adult humor, even like Arrested Development. It almost seems like
TV in itself gets more sophisticated for the most part, except for some shows which aren't listed here. Anyways, folks, if you're just tuning in for the first time, I have to admit something.
What's that?
Okay. There's this show. I think I just mentioned it a minute ago.
Maybe not mention it again.
Yeah, I'm not going to say the
name. If we want to work, we don't want to alienate too many people.
I will tell you this. I really respect Chuck Lorre. Mm-hmm. He wrote the lyrics to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles theme song back in the 80s. Some of his best work. And I would love to work with you, sir, someday. Well, I really like Mom.
And Dharma and Greg.
Dharma and Greg was good, too.
Yes.
But why do people like the other show that he was really popular for?
I would be happy with Dharma and Greg for 12 seasons.
Me, too.
That would be a cool. Well, I don't know if it would last that long, but maybe like 6 or 7.
I mean, I'll be happy with Mom for 12 seasons. I mean, I'm okay with that. Yeah. But
Two and a Half Men was okay for a while, you know.
For the first few seasons.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, and the other show was good for like a season.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors on that show are amazing. I'll give them that. Yeah. You know, I think they're all brilliant actors. Mm-hmm. They're really great. So Tommy Westfall, folks. So yeah, I just find it really cool to look through this. I mean, if you look through this thing, I mean, like the Munsters is involved, Murphy Brown. I'm going through this again. It's just funny. Like, speaking of that, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is part of this.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So that means that Chuck Lorre is part of.
Part of the Tommy Westfall universe.
Of his mind.
Yes. Yes.
So what if you exist outside of Tommy Westfall's mind? Does that mean that you exist independently of him, or does everything exist in his mind?
My thing is I have a feeling that somehow eventually all shows will be connected to Tommy Westfall.
Like at some point,
like somehow they will all.
Well, yeah, it's only a matter of time because
But I mean, mind you, there are some shows like you can't connect. Like, obviously, you can't connect talk shows or you know, Saturday Night Live or something
like that. Yeah,
that's
different,
though,
but that's...
But, you know, because, I mean, you're not going to, you know, like, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert isn't going to be connected to the Tommy Westfall universe. But, yeah, this is definitely the granddaddy of all theories. It's the alpha and the omega of wacky wild theories, man. Wacky. Is it wacky?
Right. Wacky. Now, I'm going to bring...
Do you hate it when I say it like that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I'm going to bring something up.
I like annoying Matt.
And you're going to hate me because we've had this discussion like 15 times already.
Yes, go ahead.
You know what I'm going to say.
No.
Is that there's an episode in Community.
Yes.
Where Jeff Winger is like having like a bunch of drama with his friends at school. And at one point he goes, God, it's like my life is Degrassi High. So my question again, as it was back then, is if all of this is in Tommy Westfall's mind and Community's not in his universe because there's no actual characters.
Actually, Community is part of his universe.
It is. Yes. So what happened then?
So that's where it gets kind of tricky, because there are shows that there have been television shows like sitcoms and stuff that part of this universe, and they'll even have characters from another show cross over, but then later they'll talk about that. Like, okay, one example is, I do believe, like in Blossom, if I remember reading this correctly, the real person of Will Smith visited her in that
but she also talked about watching the TV show Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So, what I mean is the character of Will Smith visited her, not the real person Will Smith.
Oh, okay.
So like the character Will Smith visited her from the Fresh Prince. Like there was a crossover, crossover episode or something. But then later on in another episode, she talked about watching the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So that kind of just like makes you wonder, like, is it part of the universe or not?
That's wild.
There are some things like that too. Like I've seen that before too. Like on other shows, like there's been times where I've seen it. Yeah, there was like a. I know that like supposedly like all the TGIF shows were all interconnected in certain ways. Like on like back in the 90s, and but there were episodes where. You know, like they'd have a crossover where like Steve Urkel would appear on one show, but then you'd also have them talk about somebody watching Family Matters, or, you know, you'd have somebody talk about watching Sabrina the Teenage Witch, but Sabrina appeared on their show earlier or something. You know, it's like
cross promotion.
Yeah. So that puts a little bit of a dent in this theory, but I still like to tend to think that all the television I watch is inside of Tommy Westfall's mind.
Well, plus Tommy may have just done that on purpose. Yes. He wanted to give himself more of a challenge. So he's like, all right, well, I'll do this now.
Yeah.
I'll have the character of Will Smith visit Blossom or meet with her or whatever, and then she'll watch, you know, the Fresh Prince. Because I think I remember during that time that Blossom and the Fresh Prince were back-to-back.
Yeah.
One of them started, I'm not sure which one came first or not, but I know that they were one after the other. On like was it Saturday or Sunday nights? I don't remember.
I think it was like Mondays, actually.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But yeah, I remember them being one right after the other. So that could have been like maybe like a cross promotional thing. You know what it was then? It was probably then Blossom probably came first then, because you would have the Fresh Prince on that show, and then the next episode would be the Fresh Prince. I don't know. And then I'm going to have to go with my old TV guides from like 1993, and which, you know, I don't own anymore, but.
So yeah, I'm trying to.
Pretty wild stuff here.
Trying to figure out how Community is connected to the Tommy Westfall universe.
Okay. Because at the time, though, you said it wasn't, because there wasn't actually any characters from any of the show.
Oh. But I know how it's connected.
Okay.
Okay. It's through a fictional brand of potato chips.
Oh, the Let's brand?
Let's potato chips. Oh, that's because Let's potato chips appear in Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm.
In which Munch also appears.
Right, okay.
So that connects you to everything he was part of.
And Let's was in a whole bunch of shows. Like it was a whole company that just made fake chips, right?
Oh, yeah, they're on Brooklyn Nine-Nine all the time, too. There's a company that makes fake props for TV shows. Yeah. But the most popular show to ever have Let's on it is Community.
Yeah,
because they make a big deal about it. And now it's on, like, a bunch of shows.
Yeah, I noticed that now.
So,
get your hands
but I think Arrested Development might have been one of the first shows to have it on there. Wow. But or maybe it was even before that. But there was also the Wild Oil Company from the TV show Running Wild also appeared in the episode The Psychology of Letting Go. And so I guess that connects it to the Tommy Westfall universe. There's a whole there's a Tommy Westfall wiki too as well, so you can go through that and it tells you exactly how every show is connected. It gives you a summary of the show and then how every show is connected. So
that's awesome.
You could probably get onto this rabbit hole and
never come out.
Yeah, be stuck there
and just read,
you know,
read,
and eventually read. You'll be inside that snow globe.
Yeah, you'll be part of his
I mean, who knows, maybe this podcast is inside Tommy
that's
Westfall's
what I'm saying
head.
what if something happens where somehow a character not the actor or actress, but the character, what if they do a show with us, but they go into that character. So now technically All Too Real 2 is in Tommy Westfall's mind.
What if we're all inside of Tommy Westfall?
That's what I'm starting to wonder.
What if the world, the universe, is all inside of a snow globe?
Realistically speaking, if a little kid, of course he's not a little kid now, but if a kid turned into an adult is able to come up with 374 shows and counting to date just in his mind, not even writing it down, just all in his head. I'm pretty sure that he's got the whole universe in his mind.
Inside his head.
So
he's got the whole world in his mind. No, no.
Okay. Anyways, so
and hands because he's holding the snow globe.
Yeah, got the whole world in a snow globe in his hands. Anyways, so yeah, this one I'm gonna fully believe.
Yeah, I'm,
and I believe that you, me, and our listeners are all inside of Tommy Westfall's head.
Whoa!
So, folks, have fun inside that snow globe.
Yeah.
Watch out for the snow.
Yeah.
And you have anything else to say here, Matt, before we sign off?
Just have a good night or a good day or whatever. Thanks for listening.
Yes.
As usual.
Yes.
Because I'm pretty sure most of you are.
I know I know this episode was a little wacky.
Yes, it was.
Wacky.
Mm.
Matt, you're going to kill me, aren't you? Okay, folks, if Matt doesn't kill me, we'll be back next time with another episode of All Too Real 2. So, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.